Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. And on the line with us is Lamar Waldron. He is the author of numerous books. For some reason, I don't have it on my one sheet here. But Lamar, what are the titles of your most recent books?
Well, the most recent book is The Hidden History of the JFK Assassination. And our other books, the last one I wrote with you was called Legacy of Secrecy.
All right. Okay. And Sunday, if I have a writer, was it Monday? Was JFK's 100th birthday?
It was actually yesterday. Monday was the 100th birthday of JFK. And there were people probably saw a lot of articles. I know there's a big new exhibit of 100 personal items up at a place you've been before, the JFK Presidential Library up in Boston. And, you know, so he's in the news a lot right now.
Yeah. So who killed Kennedy?
Well,
and why?
It's easy to look at that and talk about it. A big problem is a lot of the files about the people that killed Kennedy are still being kept secret today. So the people that killed JFK were three mafia bosses, Carlos Marcello of Louisiana and Texas, Santo Trafficante, who controlled much of Florida, including Tampa, Florida, and Johnny Roselli, the Chicago Mafia's man in Las Vegas and Hollywood. And all of those three gentlemen made credible confessions, confessions that historians, many of them and investigators consider credible because it was done late in life to trusted associates to, you know, for no kind of financial gain. They thought these confessions would never be made public. However, the FBI and other agencies have done a really, really good job of keeping their confessions and the information about them secret from the American public and from Congress, who has even investigated JFK's assassination and passed a law that required all of these files to be released. But luckily, because James Comey got fired by President Trump, we're now facing a situation where, in the coming weeks, there will be Senate confirmation hearings about the new FBI director, whoever that might be, and let's hope it's somebody good. And so this is a chance for senators to ask any questions they would like of the new nominee to be FBI director. But it's also a chance for your listeners and all U.S. citizens to talk to or communicate with or pressure their senators, whether they're on the Judiciary Committee. I believe it's the Judiciary Committee that would be holding the hearings. But, of course, you know, the Senate's very different from the House. The Senate is a much more collegial, friendly body, usually, except where Elizabeth Warren is concerned sometimes with the Republican leadership. And so this is a chance for people to communicate with their senators to make sure that the people on that Judiciary Committee to say, look, for 53 years, the FBI has been hiding crucial files about JFK's murder and these confessions and the people who confessed and the people who helped them from the American public and from Congress. And will you, Mr. Nominee for FBI Director, commit to obey the law and release those files? You know, there's even an official list that was kept secret during the 50th anniversary of JFK's murder just a few years ago, back in, I guess it's been 2013 now. And the reason it was kept secret, I think, is because when it was finally released earlier this year, and I want to credit another writer named Russell Baker with posting that full list online on his website, we saw that most of the crucial files that you and I have been looking for more than 30 years were not even on that list, even though some of those files are discussed, and the fact that they are still withheld is on other parts of the National Archives website. So we have this unusual situation where all this information, after 53 years after JFK was murdered, is still being kept secret by the FBI and other agencies, and yet we do have this window of opportunity in the coming weeks to release some of these incredibly important files.
So if the FBI knew that Marcello, Trafficante, and Roselli, the three of America's most powerful mobsters, murdered John Kennedy, number one, why did they kill Kennedy? And number two, why did Lyndon Johnson sit Earl Warren down and say, son, you got to cover this thing up?
Well, getting Earl Warren, who was the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, to be on a commission while Jack Ruby, the man who shot the accused assassin, while the accused assassin was in police custody and on live television that I watched as a kid when I was playing hooky from church that morning pretending to be sick. You know, Earl Warren knew that Jack Ruby's case could reach the Supreme Court. And if he's on this commission that's investigating Ruby and Oswald and any possible connections, you know, that could be a constitutional crisis because he would have to recuse himself. Then, you know, any decision, you know, could split. So this could be horrible. But LBJ said, look, millions of lives are at stake. And we have this information now. This has eventually been declassified, and it's been discussed by LBJ's President Johnson's biographers. He basically said it could be World War III because the initial the FBI wasn't stupid. They didn't just kill somebody and let the chips fall where they may. They had done that back in the early 1950s when the mafia, some of these same mobsters, had the Attorney General elect of Alabama assassinated because he ran on an anti-mob platform, and he was assassinated in Phoenix City, Alabama, the most corrupt city in America. Right across from huge Fort Benning, Georgia. And that was bad because the Eisenhower and Nixon administration basically ignored the mafia as much as they could. You couldn't ignore a state attorney general elect being assassinated. So Eisenhower was forced against what they usually did to send in the army to declare martial rule there and try to get the mafia out of Phoenix City. So what the mafia did to kill JFK, they planted very clear and, in hindsight, extremely ludicrously obvious evidence pointing at a communist, a seeming communist called Lee Harvey Oswald. But they also planted information that the public didn't necessarily see at the time that pointed to Fidel Castro and or Russia having manipulated Oswald into somehow having killed JFK. Now, all of that information eventually did get declassified. The CIA looked into that information because they had access to even more than the FBI did. And the guy who eventually headed the CIA, Richard Helms, concluded there was nothing to that. In fact, we can now even trace the mob-linked CIA supervisor who was the source of that information. But now, what's old is new again. Here in 2017, there are TV shows and articles today coming out saying that Oswald did it, even though, of course, Naval Intelligence, they conducted their investigation, concluded he didn't. More files we only have partially. And yet, if you watch on the History Channel, JFK Declassified, tracking Oswald with, I guess, ex-CIA agent Bob Baer and an LAPD police lieutenant, you'll hear that Oswald did it. It just assumed with no evidence, and Russia and Cuba were somehow behind it, and they breathlessly make it appear in this several-part miniseries that just concluded, I believe, yesterday, that somehow Castro and or Russia made him do it, which is all just ludicrous. And yet this is being presented, you know, and one wonders how much of our tax dollars for the CIA are used to help those shows. But other people too. Philip Sheehan, very respected former New York Times writer, has an article on Politico and other sites, again, leaking this old, discredited Castro and or Russia.
So the net here is that LBJ, at least initially, was convinced that Oswald did it and that Oswald had connections to Castro. And this was just after the Cuban Missile Crisis. And he thought that if the American people knew that Castro had hired a guy to kill Kennedy, that would force his hand. He would have to invade Cuba, and that would lead to World War III against the Soviet Union. Is that a good summary?
That's not only a great summary, but there's also one extra bit that you and I were the first people to discover that LBJ knew as well. LBJ knew that John F. Kennedy and his administration had been poised to sort of invade Cuba 10 days after JFK's trip to Dallas. That they were working with the number three man in Cuba, the head of the Cuban army, the founder of the Cuban army, the highest black official in Cuba, a country which was, according to our CIA at that time, of 70% African descent, African descent, that Commander Juan Almeida, number three man in Cuba, head of the Cuban Army, was working with President Kennedy. And 10 days after Dallas, Commander Almeida was to have Fidel Castro and his brother killed. The assassination, as best we can tell from the CIA files we do have, and our interviews, would be based on a Russian or a Russian sympathizer. And then Commander Almeida would invite U.S. troops into Cuba.
We'll pick this up on the other side.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
Marwin, the music starts. You got about 10 seconds. We'll be right back with, it's 28 minutes past the hour, with more of Lamar Waldron. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Lamar Waldron on the line with us, the author of The Hidden History of the JFK Assassination and Legacy of Secrecy and Watergate. And what am I missing here, Lamar?
Watergate, The Hidden History, and then our first book, Ultimate Sacrifice.
Right. And you've got a book on Nixon, too, don't you?
Well, that was Watergate, The Hidden History, Nixon, the Mafia, and the CIA.
There you go. Okay. So we were talking about why it was that Lyndon Johnson asked Earl Warren to basically run the Warren Commission and lie. I remember sitting across from Dave Powers and having him tell me how he was trying to tell them what was going on, and Jerry Ford kept interrupting him and things like that.
Well, and people should know that when you talk to Dave Powers, David Powers, along with Kenneth O'Donnell, were JFK's two closest aides. They were in the car directly behind JFK's limo, so they had the perfect view of the president as he was being shot and the grassy knoll. And both men, as Powers told you, and as both men told the Speaker of the House in the 1980s, Tip O'Neill, and he put it in his autobiography, they saw and heard the first shot come from the front, which is the shot that hit JFK in the hollow of his throat just below his Adam's apple. And they saw that horrible fatal headshot come from the front as well. And you're right.
And the front is the so-called grassy knoll.
Exactly right, which means conspiracy. And that's why the Warren Commission counsel, Arlen Specter, didn't want to hear that. You know, there's a tortuous, not even testimony, but like a affidavit that David Powers did. And, you know, and they weren't the only ones. A Secret Service agent in that same limo also saw that, the fatal headshot from the front. And so, but again, people have to realize, you know, that this is a cover-up, and I have to say this, you know, done for some good reasons, but done because of the mafia's planted information. In other words,
the mafia had gamed the FBI, the Secret Service, the CIA, and LBJ, at least for a short period. And Bobby Kennedy, for that matter, thought
And see, that's why people have to remember, you and I were part of the cover-up, Tom. We could admit that now and talk about it. But you and I found out about, you know, Commander Almeida and the plan for a coup in Cuba 10 days after Dallas that was never supposed to be made secret, not a year after the coup, not 10 years, never. I mean, this is.
I mean, it was never supposed to be revealed.
Right. I'm sorry. Never, that secret's never supposed to be uncovered, because, you know, the people in Cuba could never know that their leader had worked with JFK to secretly eliminate the Castro brothers. And so this was something secret beyond all imagination. LBJ didn't know about it. He finds out about it literally when he, you know, apparently the morning after he became president, and he is shocked. So he doesn't just believe this phony information implicating Fidel and Russia and Oswald that the mafia had planted. He thinks, well, perhaps they somehow infiltrated this operation and they got Kennedy first. I mean, LBJ basically said that.
Right.
Robert Kennedy.
He thought he might be next.
Well, and not only that, but I mean, even Robert Kennedy wondered about that very thing, because he was running this operation for his brother who had delegated it to him. So he even asked the head of the CIA, within hours of his own brother's murder, you know, did you do this? And Bobby focused suspicion on some people who were involved there, and he later did his own investigation. So I don't want to leave the impression that everybody knew everything right off the bat. They didn't. You know,
right. They thought they were saving the Republic. They had to cover up who killed Kennedy because they thought it would lead back to Castro and possibly Castro and Khrushchev.
And it would, you know, start the nuclear missile
and it would start World War III. That would be the end of civilization.
And the Warren Commission was the idea, not of LBJ, not of Earl Warren, not of J. Edgar Hoover, who thought the FBI ought to do everything, but it was the idea of associates, friends and associates of Robert Kennedy.
Right.
But Robert Kennedy himself, along with the CIA and the FBI, had to withhold information, as you and I were the first to discover. 4 days before Dallas, JFK was almost killed in Tampa, Florida. John and Robert Kennedy covered that information up because JFK gave him an important speech in Miami shortly after his major trip to Tampa, where he had a huge motorcade. Then he gave the speech in Miami with words. The CIA had actually helped him craft, intended for Commander Almeida to reassure him that the U.S. would back him in his coup. So JFK couldn't very well cancel his Tampa motorcade or say, gee, I almost got shot in Tampa. That had to be covered up. That was covered up for years until you and I found it after going through thousands of pages of
hours and hours,
you know,
hours of microfilm.
And then I called up the Tampa chief of police, who said, you know, Mr. Waldron, I've been waiting on this call since 1963. You know, but the FBI, in coordination with the CIA, had withheld all information about the Tampa attempt from the Warren Commission, from the four later government committees, including the JFK Assassination Records Review Board in the 90s.
Well, J. Edgar Hoover was being
Congress.
J. Edgar Hoover was being blackmailed by the same mobsters who killed Kennedy.
Well, he had been dealing with them since the 50s. And it's good you mentioned Hoover. We can talk about a little about, because what happened in the 50s, the mafia had the run of Cuba and America. The Eisenhower-Nixon administration, except for that one time in Phoenix City, Alabama, pretty much left the mafia alone. It was Senator John F. Kennedy and his Senate counsel brother Robert Kennedy that went after the mafia in the late 50s in a very public way. That's what launched Kennedy to the presidency. And then, right before the election, Vice President, the 8-year Vice President Richard Nixon, ordered the mafia to he ordered the CIA to hire the mafia to kill Fidel Castro right before the election, an October surprise that the experienced Nixon felt would make him look much better than the young Senator Kennedy.
Well, that time JFK was beating up Nixon because just a year and a half earlier, Castro had taken over Cuba and at first approached the United States government. And then we said no, and he went to Russia.
Well,
and so
specifically,
Kennedy was beating up Nixon for being vice president when Cuba went communist.
Right. In other words, Richard Nixon is the one who said no, who could have started a new relationship with Castro. Richard Nixon didn't do it. He preferred to have the mafia work with the CIA to kill Fidel. Now, the three of the mobsters who were involved in the plots that Nixon ordered to kill Fidel Castro before the 1960 election were Carlos Marcello, Santo Trafficante, and Johnny Roselli.
The three guys who killed JFK.
Right. So
I mean, they didn't actually pull the trigger. None of them pulled the trigger, but they were the guys who made it happen.
They coordinated it, and they all later confessed, but you can start to see what happened. Some people say, well, did the CIA kill Kennedy? Did any Castro Cubans do it? Did the mafia? Well, yeah, these mob bosses were all working for the CIA. In 1963, the CIA continued these plots.
Nixon had hired them.
Right. But the plots continued without telling JFK or Bobby after Nixon was no longer vice president, and the mobsters were able to use their work for the CIA to provide cover for killing JFK. Now, the CIA, some people realized that. The FBI was monitoring some of these mobsters under JFK because he really went hard after the mafia. So now you can start to see the many intelligence failures that the FBI and CIA and Naval Intelligence and the Secret Service were covering up back in 1963. But what do you do? I mean, imagine if after JFK was shot, you know, somebody came out, whether it was Bobby or the Secret Service or LBJ, and said, you know, JFK was almost killed in Tampa 4 days earlier. Well, then you can't limit the assassination to Oswald. It might lead to Russia or Cuba, thanks to the fake mafia evidence, and that could lead to World War III. So once you start covering up, and like I say, the real cover-up started under Vice President Nixon in 1960, but it continued with Tampa, and there was an attempt in Chicago 2 weeks before Tampa. Once you start covering up, these agencies don't feel like they can ever finally come clean. Now, there are people, and I really love the work the people in the FBI, you know, that the FBI people do, the CIA people do. They do tough jobs. You know, they have political considerations they have to follow. But, you know, they certain longtime bureaucrats in each of those agencies need to come clean finally, instead of continuing to support these phony Castro killed JFK or Russia killed JFK stories. It's time to let all this information come out, because it's been 53 years. They have Carlos Marcello in federal prison in 1985 on tape talking about aspects of the assassination. He made a full confession in front of an FBI informant and a witness. Santo Trafficante, he confessed in 87, but the FBI has files from December of 63 where Trafficante talks specifically about the payoffs for the assassinations with his attorney at that time in December 63, Frank Regano.
Who
we don't
know.
Have those files. We just have a reference to them.
Right, right. Yeah, it's and there was a point at which, right after you and I discovered the name of the number three guy in Cuba, Almeida.
Well, I think it's Almeida. I'm great with history.
We mispronounced it for a long time.
Foreign languages are not my strong suit.
Yeah, so and I came to D.C. and I talked to one of the guys in charge of security, and he basically threatened me with prison for the rest of my life if I ever mentioned that name out loud, and pointed out that this was still a secret operation. This guy was still inside the Cuban government. He was still an American asset. He was still in a position to take over if the Castro brothers were to die or be assassinated. And I was about to blow this deal. And so we had to basically fictionalize this guy in the first book in Unequal Protection, Ultimate Sacrifice. And, eventually he died, so we named him in Legacy of Secrecy. But is that operation still considered top secret?
Well,
is that what's going on?
So.
Is that why the bureaucrats aren't speaking?
Apparently so. In other words, even though Commander Almeida died years ago, several years ago, and you're right, you and I had to cover that up for more than a decade, and I had to cast a lot of, you know, sort of warranted, some not, suspicion toward Che Guevara, of all people, in the first edition of Ultimate Sacrifice, which is, by the way, people should always buy the trade paperback editions of our books, because they have all the extra stuff we had to leave out of the hardbacks. And so, yes, you're right. Almost the entire JFK Almeida coup plan file is still secret to this day. The files on the people we interviewed, you and I interviewed between us, two dozen people who worked with John and Robert Kennedy on aspects of the coup plan, these attempts like in Tampa. Almost all of that information is secret. Some files have slipped through. That's how you and I know about this. We interviewed the people who actually worked on these plans, or, you know, worked like the chief of police in Tampa to keep JFK alive. Various files have slipped through, so we know that massive amounts of other files exist. The National Archives says about 50,000 pages in the form of 3,000 documents are yet to be released and will be released this fall. But NBC News reported back in 1998 that there were 1 million CIA files alone, not pages, files. And as for the FBI, we can talk now about, and we'll tell your listeners, there's a secret file room the FBI has had in Washington for years. And whenever Congress has asked for files or other agencies, it's totally unclear if the FBI just searches their regular files or if they go to the special file room in Washington, where apparently some of these unreleased files may reside. And the FBI even has a secret warehouse in Maryland, where when the special file room in Washington is too full of special secrets, they get shipped off to this warehouse in Maryland. We don't know if those files have ever been searched. There are so many crucial FBI files, like all those wiretaps of Carlos Marcello in federal prison, Johnny Roselli's many meetings with Jack Ruby in Miami shortly before the assassination, while Roselli was under FBI surveillance. So many of this things. So this is why when there is a new hearing, confirmation hearing, for the new FBI director, the nominee, we have to find some way to get even one senator to say, look, will you obey the law? will you look in your special file room in Washington for these unreleased files? Will you have someone go to that warehouse in Maryland and look for the files there? And there are more files, too, that the FBI...
Why so much conventional wisdom? I mean, you know, as you pointed out, there was just this History Channel special. There's been a bunch of others, you know, Oliver Stone's piece, et cetera. You know, everybody say, oh, it was the CIA or the CIA, you know, had it done, or it was, you know...
Shadowy general.
Yeah, you know, it's a... you know, when it was... I mean, prior to the election of Jack Kennedy, there'd never been more than, what, 30 prosecutions of the mob in any one given year by any administration? And Jack Kennedy initiated something like 700 prosecutions in the first year. I mean, it shouldn't be rocket science that the mob was seriously pissed off at him.
Well, and they no longer had Cuba to go back to. And more importantly, Kennedy had banned the mafia from this coup plan or from reopening their mob casinos in Cuba if the coup plan succeeded. So the mob had nothing to gain by letting the coup plan go forward. They had everything to gain by using this incredible secrecy around the coup plan, which, like I say, even the vice president didn't know about until after he became president, to use as the cover for their killing of JFK. I mean, and you and I can talk about some of the ways the mob infiltrated this top secret coup plan. One of the people we interviewed who worked closely with John and Robert Kennedy, a Cuban exile by the name of Harry Williams, very famous hero of the Bay of Pigs, the man who helped to get the Bay of Pigs prisoners out of Cuba, working with his best friend in 1963, Robert Kennedy. I should say late 62 and early and throughout 63. And Harry Williams told us a man by the name of Bernard Barker worked for Santo Trafficante, as he later learned, while he was working on the top secret coup plan. Now, who was Bernard Barker? Some of your listeners will say, well, that name is vaguely familiar. Well, he was the assistant the CIA assigned to E. Howard Hunt when Nixon's plan to use the mafia to kill Fidel in 1960 began.
And he was also one of the Watergate burglars.
Exactly right.
Yeah, still with Nixon. We'll be back with more. Lamar Waldron right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So Nixon, up to his eyeballs in the mafia. The mafia kills Kennedy. Where does that leave Nixon? More after this. And welcome back. So Lamar, as I said in the tease, Nixon was up to his eyeballs in the mafia. The mafia kills Kennedy. What does Nixon do in 63 after that?
Well, Nixon, by the way, was in Dallas, but he wasn't at the secret meeting that you may have seen in the Oliver Stone Nixon movie, you know, or having a secret meeting with a rich Dallas oil man and J. Edgar Hoover. No, Nixon was out partying with Joan Crawford, the Hollywood star, until the early hours of the morning, as was widely reported in both Dallas newspapers.
Wasn't she later murdered to shut her up about the mob?
No, you're thinking of Dorothy Kilgallen.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Okay. America's leading female investigative reporter, who after she privately had the only private interview with Jack Ruby, and she was looking into Ruby's connections to New Orleans, she winds up dead. I'll leave that alone. But let's get back to Nixon and Bernard Barker. So you're right. Bernard Barker was one of E. Howard Hunt's Watergate burglars. But Barker is a very interesting character. So here you have a guy who is a Cuban exile. He's an official CIA agent. I mean, he drew a monthly salary in 1960, in 1963 and after. And yet he was really working, as Harry Williams eventually found out, told me, and I was able to confirm, for Santo Trafficante.
Yeah, I remember, and correct me, I mean, maybe this is a false memory or something, but I remember Harry Williams telling us that Bernard Barker was a killer, a professional killer.
Oh, yeah, he did. Well, yeah. And again, there's confirmation for that. Many of your listeners, or some of your listeners, will have heard stories about a fake CIA agent. And this is in the Warren volumes, not in the report, but in the supporting 26 volumes, where there was a so-called Secret Service agent on the grassy knoll that law enforcement encountered and who said everything's under control up here. Now, there were no Secret Service agents on the ground in Dealey Plaza. They were all with the motorcade. Whoever claimed to be Secret Service on that grassy knoll wasn't Secret Service, and they were part of the assassination team.
Right, and the assumption is that was Bernard Barker?
Well, there are two independent witnesses, including a Dallas deputy sheriff, identified Bernard Barker as being the, you know, the fake Secret Service agent on the grassy knoll is a CIA agent and Howard Hunt's assistant. He could get that kind of fake credentials.
Right.
And in a lawsuit, Bernard Barker testified under oath that he saw with his own eyes the assassination unfold before his eyes. He claimed he was watching a live broadcast of the Dallas motorcade when he saw JFK killed, but there wasn't even a live broadcast in Dallas.
Right.
Nobody saw JFK die on live television. If Bernard Barker saw JFK's head getting blown off, that's because he was on the grassy knoll. But now here's the problem. There are Bernard Barker, he was interviewed by one of the big congressional investigations, the House Select Committee on Assassinations in 1979. According to the National Archives website, his interview is still classified top secret today and is not does not appear on the list of files to be released this fall.
Wow.
And so he's a great example of
he was the linchpin. I mean, he was the guy who tied the CIA to the mob in a way that allowed the mob to know what the CIA was up to so that they could make it look like it was Castro and get the CIA and the rest of the Nixon or Johnson administration freaked out enough to cover the thing up.
And he even handled the payoff for the CIA to Commander Almeida in Cuba. So he knew all of the deepest, darkest secrets.
Wow. More with Lamar Waldron right after this. Stick around. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Lamar Waldron on the line with us. The secret history of the John F. Kennedy assassination. His book about Watergate is brilliant. The books that we wrote together, Ultimate Sacrifice, Legacy of Secrecy. Lamar, we have 90 seconds left in the show. What message do you want to leave with people?
Well, is that people need to look at who their senators are. They need to contact their own senators. Excuse me, and look at the senators on the Senate Judiciary Committee and try to get them to bring up these points in the confirmation hearings for the new FBI director that Donald Trump is going to appoint in the coming weeks. This is our last chance. Like I say, the most important files will not be released this fall, and they're not even on the list.
Does the FBI director have that kind of discretion?
Well, the president does. And again, there is a law that requires these files to be released. All the FBI director has to do is to obey the law.
Yeah, Bill Clinton signed that law, didn't he?
He signed the law. Congress passed it unanimously. I think one thing I'm going to try to do, Tom, is to do an article about what we've talked about today. If people in a few days, give me a few days, will go to the website, thehiddenhistoryofthejfkassassination.com, I'll try to have a link to that article, and I'll try to get very specific about who on the Senate Judiciary Committee we need to try to influence to bring this up, because there's a Republican chair, Democratic ranking member. Everyone, senator, can talk to their Senate colleagues and say, look, someone needs to bring this up, and this may be our last chance.
There we go. Lamar Waldron. Thank you, Lamar.
Thank you so much, Tom.
And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us, which includes you. Get out there, get active, tag. You're it.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com. We'll be right back.